Welcome to the It's All Cobblers to Me preview show. I'm Danny and I'm here to look ahead to this Friday's Good Friday meeting between Oldham Athletic and the Cobblers. To help me do that, I'll be joined shortly by Dave Bradley from the Latics Football phone-in. But first, Charles Cummins is here.
Hello.
How are you doing, Charles?
Hello,
all right.
Yes, yeah, I'm good. Thank you, mate.
Good.
Happy Easter holiday to you.
Happy Easter. It's come around quick.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
yes,
happy.
Indeed.
It's
is this your favourite of the holidays?
Oh, No, I don't know. I think Christmas trumps it just because there's so much football around it.
Okay, yeah. So I've got a very serious question for you because a friend of mine very seriously says that he prefers Easter to Christmas and I'll find the reasons for it now for you so that I don't misquote him.
Is he listening?
Because he possibly is, yes. Here's the reasons why he prefers Easter to Christmas. Spring weather, blossom, cream eggs and mini eggs, hot cross buns on tap, Easter biscuits, Simnel cake, zero pressure to see anyone, zero pressure to buy any presents, mini cream eggs, long weekends, warm sunshine, daffodils, tulips, lint bunnies and lamb instead of turkey.
We didn't start the fire. I mean, he makes a strong case, to be fair.
He does.
But rethink after that. That's excellent. If anyone wants to make the case for Christmas next week, then
I thought you nearly said make the cakes for Christmas then, but yes.
He'd do that as well.
Either or. Either or.
Do that as well. Good Friday this week. Friday afternoon. Trip up north to the cold Boundary Park. Will it be cold this time of year? Let's find out, shall we, Charles?
Let's
bring in our Oldham fan. Please welcome to the show, Dave Bradley from the Latics Football phone-in. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm very well, guys. Thanks for having me. It's going to be freezing, just to answer your question. It'll be a summer's day in Oldham, but it'll probably be the wind temperature of about -3. So definitely... wrap up because it gets very cold. It was the highest ground, but then the Hawthorns just picked it in the English Football League. So the second highest ground, but it is absolutely freezing. So make sure you get your big coats on because I know what you Southern softies are like.
you say the Hawthorns pipped it. Did it suddenly rise a little bit more?
Well,
when they redeveloped
the stadium, it became the highest ground because the the old Hawthorns ground they played elsewhere, didn't they? West Brom, I can't remember the name for the life of me, but when they had the redevelopment of the ground, that became the highest ground in the English Football League. So, yeah, a bit of trivia there for you guys. But, yeah, okay. It's still colder, Oldham. I'll definitely give you that. So, are you guys travelling up?
I'll be travelling across from Warrington. So, I'm not too far away from you. So, it's a nice, easy journey for me. Danny, on the other hand, is in Bristol. So, he would be travelling up, but I believe that Easter is a very busy time for you and your family, isn't it?
It is. Very busy time. Very busy time.
All those eggs to eat.
All those eggs to eat, yeah. Egg. When I was going to Boundary Park, I was going to say, even in August and May when I've been there, it's just seems so cold all the time. But
yeah,
I can't see it being any different this week.
It's true. Even that last game of the season a few years ago.
Yeah.
That was still cold, and it was the middle of May. Well, beginning of May. Still,
yeah, I've gone many a time in a t-shirt and then regretted it about 3 minutes walking in because you just sat in the shade. No matter where you sit, it's just getting the sun in like the Rochdale Road end, the Jimmy Fizzle stand. Now it's called. And there's like a congregation of people who welcome in t-shirts and they just stand there at the very bottom right until they get the sun all day, but then they complain that the sun's in their eyes. So there's never any pleasing an Oldham fan. So, and obviously this season we've not been pleased, as you can probably appreciate, due to our precarious position. It's getting a bit nerve-wracking now for the Latics fans.
Mm. So, going back to around this time last year, you appointed Keith Curl after he left us. I think it was around about a month after he'd left us, wasn't it? Came in when you were 16th in League 2, finished the season 18th. What and then left after a couple of months of this season. What did you make of his tenure overall to the Kid Girl?
There's someone that understands.
That sounds familiar, actually.
I think the signings that Keith Curl made have turned out to be decent signings on the limitations that we've got, but the tactics he adopted weren't League Two tactics. 3-5-2, playing it out from the back, and just no plan B, really. It was very much like Paul Dickoff. He'd score a goal and he'd try and defend a 1-0 lead, but the problem was that we weren't scoring any goals because he didn't sign the right striker. He signed Hallam Hope, and he's an attacking midfielder, but he tried to make him a striker, which is really bizarre. And yeah, he just had no plan B. He had no attacking mindset. Trying to defend, play out from the back, defend, and then hit people on the break with players who weren't quick enough. And it was just really frustrating. And you know, there is a reason why where we are in the league, because we just haven't been good enough at the start of the season. And then lo and behold, you beat us 2-1, and he put Cal Peggiani up front in that game for the second half and adopted a 4-4-2, and I think we scored in the second half at the end of the first half, and then we sort of dominated you for that half of the game. But then lo and behold, he got sacked. But it looked like he turned the corner and realised that 3-5-2 hadn't worked, and he went 4-4-2 with his tackling. So yeah.
That's really interesting, Charles. I remember that game at Lincoln where he suddenly went away from the 3-5-2. I think we lost the game in the end, but it seemed like we were playing a top of the league team, and it seemed like we were actually turning a corner. We were actually doing pretty well in that game.
Was that the game where Danny Rose scored his last ever game?
His overhead kick, worldie, yeah.
Right the death, yeah.
But it seemed to have that one game, and then he just turned, didn't he? He just went back to, that didn't work because we lost.
Yeah, I'd say there's no plan B. It was just very much a, I don't know, you can tell he was a defender, for goodness sake. He was very much, you know, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't mind if we weren't conceding goals, but we're getting pumped every game, you know, due to the fact that he just had it was like a zonal marking he played as well, which was really bizarre. Yes.
Yeah. We know all about that.
Oh, it's just like, you know, and it was just like strikers just walking into pockets of space and just in tap-ins. And it was just like, if Kevin Ellison is scoring against you, you're in big trouble, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? And that was the first game of the season when Kevin Ellison came on, 41 years old, and tapped it in for an 88th minute winner for Newport. And I just thought, we're in big trouble. We fluked to win against Port Vale, where he put Cal Peggiani up front again for the last 10 minutes just to shake it up a bit. And they scored like this diving header wonder on goal. And he beat Rochdale. That saved his job as well. Beat Sutton, who were bottom of the league, with Junior Luamba. So we were proper scraping the barrel with Keith Curl. He just didn't get League Two football. And what's the most bizarre is that they gave him a 2-year deal and then had to pay him off. So he was quite shrewd, Mr. Curl, in his managerial approach, you know, to get himself a 2-year deal, because Harry Kewell never got a 2-year deal. And it's always been very much a till the end of the season jobby. Laurent Benidi, Harry Kewell, Frankie Bone, they've all been like on these 1-year deals. I think even Scholes got a 1-year deal. So Keith Curl sort of won the battle in the sacking, really. It was very bizarre. And then it moved, we adopted it, and we've got two more managers, which we'll talk about if you want. But I'm getting a bit depressed now.
did you get that in the summer, Carl? The 2-year deal?
Yes, he did, yes. Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I will say is that, as depressed as you were, I mean, imagine having to be up against League One teams playing zonal marking, and so in a way you had it easier.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah.
What did you make of him in terms of like post-match interviews and things like that?
Well, it was the old that's what he used to do all the time. He was very thinking on his feet, but he was He came across, I liked him, you know, because he was quite positive. He was always looking on the bright side of a defeat. Mm. And he did talk sense. He could see where it was going wrong. And he had COVID, but I liked, you know, Colin West. Is it Colin West? Was he your assistant, the Geordie bloke from Sunderland?
Yeah.
And I liked him a lot more because he was like, after the Bristol Rovers game, he would say, players should be knocking each other out in that dressing room after this game. It was an absolute disgrace. And he was like, this is what I want from a manager. He was like, we played absolutely shambolic. He was really, you know, we were really poor. We should be knocking each other's heads off. We're just not good enough, you know. And he was really, had a bit of bite about him, Colin West. I liked him a lot. And when he actually left the club, I even texted Colin West to say, thanks very much. And he sent like a really long reply to me saying, thanks very much, really appreciate it. I thought we were a bit unlucky. And he was a really, like, really approachable guy.
I always felt that those two were a bit yin and yang. You know, Curl was the calm, measured, quite good in interviews, I thought, in terms of, like you said, he came across as if he could see what was going wrong and what needed to be changed. But for some reason, just couldn't quite actually get that out onto the pitch itself necessarily. Whereas Colin West was the more yappy, in your face type character that you'd be scared of.
It reminded me of Mr. Barraclough and Mr. Mackay of Porridge, if you can remember those two. It was like Keith Kerr was really nice after being beat 4-1, and like Colin West, you could see him like turning purple on the sideline, and you could imagine what he said to the players when he went back into the dressing room. But yeah, very much yin and yang, as you say. It was a very good dynamic, I think. But I think we would have been in a lot deeper trouble if we hadn't have changed it. I think they did need to go because I think he just ran out of ideas.
So can you tell us a little bit about Selim Bechor? Is that how you pronounce it?
Selim Bechor.
So he came in after Kerr. Was it just as caretaker boss?
He was our youth team coach. Yeah. He was appointed under Kuhl. He was ex-Paris Saint-Germain, Tunisian international, played for Malaga. He played in like the same team as Ronaldinho. So I don't think you never know. I think he kept Ronaldinho out of the team for a couple of games because of his form, I was reading. But they were like playing like Ajaccio and Reims at the time. Do you know what I mean? So it wasn't anything special. But he spoke very well. I watched a few of the youth team games because we went on a bit of a run. And it was very much, we'll score more than you mentality. You know, one more than you. And they played like this 5-all draw with Carlisle, the youth team. And our goalkeeper scored like a diving header from a corner in the last minute. So it was like, you know what? At least he's scoring goals. But no, it wasn't to be, really. We went to Salford on his first game. We got battered by a very, very poor Salford team with about 600 Salford fans and 2,000 Oldham fans. It was just like the worst dynamic of a crowd that you've ever seen. And then he got a couple of draws. We defended a 0-0 draw against Barrow away, which was even worse. We got beat by Tranmere in the last minute, but we played really well, to be fair. So we hit the post, we hit the bar. We had one disallowed because the linesman, or assistant referee, should I say, said that the ball moved with the wind before the player kicked it. So we scored against Tranmere, but it was ruled out. And then Tranmere went on and scored. Then we went to Hartlepool, drew 0-0. We went to Sunderland in the Pizza Cup, the Papa John's Trophy, and won with Harry Vaughan, our young starlet. So I thought, he's turning a corner. And then we got absolutely pulverised by a very, very bang average Harrogate Town side. And that was a sellout away end again. Because our support away from home was absolutely fantastic, you know, throughout this period. We had a 5-all draw against Forest Green, which was really bizarre. I didn't go to that game because that was sort of a push the boundary and Trust decided to boycott the game, so a lot of fans didn't go, and lo and behold, it was one of the highest scoring games that Oldham had ever seen in the last 10 years or something like that. But again, there was positives, but then we went to the Harrogate Town, we got beat 3-0, and it was a really vicious, poisonous atmosphere where the fans were not trying to let the players leave the pitch, they were trying to get into the tunnel, and it was quite... It was probably one of the most aggressive that I'd ever seen in Oldham fans against their own team. It just enough was enough. And I got out of there, mate, because I thought this isn't good at all. And driving home, we were 7 points adrift at the bottom of the table. And I drove home and I thought, that's it, we're National League now. And then, bizarrely, at 10 o'clock that night, an Oldham Athletic Twitter notification came up, and it was like, John Sheridan has been appointed up until the end of the season. And there's a fake Twitter account, which is official OAFC with one F in the official, where that tricked us all on deadline day a few years ago that we'd signed some player when we hadn't. And I was checking that tweet, and it turned out to be the real actual official Oldham Athletic news, and then literally my phone started buzzing. People were ringing me. A friend of mine, Danny, who's a massive Oldham fan, rang me going, "Have you heard the news? Have you heard the news?" And basically, Harrogate, all the Oldham fans who'd stayed up there were just singing, "Here's to you, Johnny Sheridan. Oldham loves you more than you will know," through Harrogate Town till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was speaking to Matt, going, "Is this real? Is this a dream?" And that's how the Latics Football Forum started, really. We just said, let's just do it and bring some positivity back to the club, because we've needed it. And yeah, Chez has come in. He was unbeaten in eight. And then we went on a six match losing streak. And we sort of just found a little bit of form, but winning two. And then... getting beat by Port Vale at weekend. So yeah, that's where we're at. And that bottom of the table, I look at it was about 25 times a day, thinking Phil Brown's got to get Barrow down. Phil Brown, he's the one. He's you know, he's my only hope. His reputation is my only hope, really. Sounds awful, but you know, when you hear stories about
it,
it's the best Star Wars reference we've had on the pod so far. Phil Brown, you're my only hope. I love it. Just before we go a little bit more into the Chezurrection, I want to talk to you about what's going on. You've mentioned it there about how toxic the atmosphere became. Obviously, most of that is all aimed at the ownership.
Yes.
And from the fact that I went into some detail researching, I think, last year, where I looked into... you know, what was going on, because I wanted to try and understand what was actually happening. And correct me if I'm wrong here, any point, please, mate. So your owner, Mr. Len Segam, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Len Segam.
He'd basically stopped talking to, well, anyone, more or less. The trust, I believe, the supporters trust at Oldham had asked for some correspondence, whether it be monthly or just regular sort of conversations, that he'd promised, and then they just didn't happen.
The trust owned 3% of the club when we went into administration, so they are a shareholder in the club, and they have the right to look at the accounts, have a monthly meeting with the owners about what's going on, and they've just been restricted access ever since you know, the start of the year, before the season started, really. It was there was a meeting at the start of the season with our then chief executive, Carl Evans, who said we were under transfer embargo, but then the trust looked on the EFL website and we were in embargo. Mm-hmm. We signed players on 2-year contracts when we weren't allowed to, that being Jason Lukeweiler, Harrison McGee, and we had to sort their contracts out. Hallam Holt was another where we had to sort his contracts out, because we'd actually signed them on contracts that we weren't allowed to sign them on because you know you can only sign players on a 1-year deal. Mm-hmm. Up to I think it's £800 a week under the embargo rules. And yeah, the trust was constantly asking, and then they've added new members to the board. Some of the old guard who had left, we've got new trust members now. I think Jim Booth, Matt Dean, Bradley Knowles, and then we're adding. That's just to name a few. That's not all of them. Mm. And they're working really hard behind the scenes, and all they want is some communication. And the trust have never said boycott the games or throw, because we're throwing tennis balls on the pitch against like Barrow and running on the pitch and pitch invasions, which was very disappointing to see as a fan for myself, because I understand the frustrations of the trust, but I also have a respect in some capacity with the ownership, because they are still paying the bills. They are still the owners of the football club, and they still have a right to do what they want with the football club, albeit it may be seen as incompetent and the wrong decision, but they have the right to do that. And as a fan who've followed Oldham since, you know, 1991, really, when I went with my father, I can never turn my back on the club. And it's just very divided. Some fans will never stop going. Some fans are boycotted, which is their right. And it's just really difficult. But John Sheridan has been this linchpin of making the crowds go from nearly 2,500. And that was a very, very questionable 2,500, because our new chief executive came out and said that 2,500 include season ticket holders who bought the tickets who may not be going, so we included that in our amount. And some games, it was like 1,200 people there, and you could hear the players talking on the pitch. It was like watching a Northwest Counties game. You know, it was really bad. You could hear like Keith Curl shouting instructions, and I was like sat in the Jimmy Frizzell end, right at the back. You could hear Keith Curl shouting, and it's like there was no atmosphere. Mm. And then lo and behold, John Sheridan came in, and we had like nearly 9,000 for the Rochdale game, and they've been 5,000, 6,000, you know, with away fans, obviously. But it's just been sensational what that man has done to the club. He has such a underlying passion for the club, and the fans just love him. They worship the ground he walks on. And if he gets us out of this relegation, I'll be pushing for John Sheridan's statue outside the ground on GoFundMe, because he is God. He is God. What, you know, with the resurrection, it's Easter, so hopefully he can win on Good Friday and we can get something on Monday and rise again against Forest Green. But that would be a miracle. I think, yeah.
With the this might be really oversimplifying it, and so forgive me here, but I completely understood what you said about your supporters trust have a stake in the club, a percentage in it, and they've got a right to see things like finances, etc., etc. But on the whole, is it the fan base, the thing that they're actually annoyed with, that you're all annoyed with, is essentially your league position and just how bad it's been over the last sort of maybe 5 years or so?
It was like, why does Abdallah Lemsegram want to buy Oldham? What's his agenda? And he said, I want to get in the Championship in 5 years. I'm going to invest. He said he invested over £100 million so far. And we're like, well, what's going on? We got relegated from League Two. We're signing players like, you know, Quincy Menning from, it wasn't Ajax, but it was like Eindhoven, I think, and he was on £12,000 a week. And then he came out and allegedly said, I never saw £12,000 a week. I was getting paid £1,000 a week. And it was just like, all everyone was getting really frustrated. He installed his brother, Mo Lemsegram, who's got no football qualifications, no coaching qualifications, or any football history other than being an agent, a sporting director, and he was making the signings. So it was just, it was just like a comedy of errors, really, from a fan's point of view. Like, you got this guy turning up with these two new French players every week for when Sheridan was in his previous spell, and Sheridan was going, well, I don't want to play him because I don't know who they are, they're not very good. And then it all came to a crunch when Sheridan was there at his first spell under Abdallah, that it was against Blackpool, and Moore ended up picking the team. And Sheridan just said, well, said to the players, do what you want because I'm not picking the team. And we ended up getting beat. I think it was like 4-3, and then that was the end of Sheridan, really. Honestly, some of the stuff you couldn't write. It was they banned fans who had an opinion on the club, saying that it's being run badly, and three fans, Don Weiss, Nathan Price, and Bradley Knowles got banned until TalkSport got involved and rang up Abdallah and said, "Can they come back in?" And he's like, "No." He goes, "Oh, come on." Jim White was saying, "Come on, Abdallah, come on," and he goes, "Okay, they can come back in." And it's just like.
As long as they apologise, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, it was something like that. It's like kids at school who've like next week. It was like, oh, come on, guys. It's just. To look at it from afar, and then you had all the schools debacle, which I haven't, you know, I could be here for, we could be here till 12 o'clock going on about that. It was just. It's so infuriating. But so laughable at the same time. It's just like, I really wish this was Tranmere Rovers or someone like that rather than Oldham Athletic, do you know what I mean? Because I wouldn't wish it on any club, really. I'm sorry, I'm retracting that. Sorry, Tranmere fans. But it's just, honestly, as a fan, you're just thinking, what next? So now it's just radio silence, and it's they put Sheridan in there. If he keeps us up, they're going to take it as it was their decision, it was their success. But there was pressure from outside where Sheridan was saying to the press, like the BBC Radio Manchester, saying, I'll come and do it for free, which when interviewed, he said, oh, I'm not doing it for free, I'm getting paid. But he said, oh, I want to get you out of this situation. So I think Sheridan was quite savvy in how he manoeuvred it, because he obviously saw the team and saw that he could probably do something with them, and he proved that he could. And then we went on a six-match losing streak, which is due to suspensions and injuries because we've got a 23-man squad under embargo. And we didn't have a fully fit back four. So it was just... It's been... I can't wait for the season to end, if I'm honest with you, because it has been so exhausting from a mental point of view. And, you know, these last... two or three games have been, my nerves have been shot. You know, I'm having to take like five packs of airways with me to chew through in the game. I'm like Fergie time. It's I shouldn't be mentioning Fergie as an Oldham fan, but it's so exhausting to watch. And that's why we do the phone-in, so we can just have a bit of joviality to talk about the positives about the game. And you know what? Sheridan's brought a bit of a real good buzz, even in those six match losing streak. We only played badly, I'd say, twice, and that was against Sutton and Carlisle. But Swindon, last minute winner. Mansfield, last minute winner. Carlisle was a last minute winner, and it was just beating Leighton Orient 2-0 the other day was fantastic, you know. It was really, really good to see. And then we I can't remember who we beat we beat Stevenage away from home, which was, you know, a six-pointer. So it shows that we've got the edge to get out of it. But, you know, it's just been really hard. And looking at your league position in fifth, you look fantastic. But it's really... be careful what you wish for, you know, whinging about being in the playoffs.
Yeah.
you know, it seems like you've got a stable ownership now, you guys, haven't you?
Fairly, yeah, I'd say so.
That's
a whole new pod. Going back to John Sheridan, he's basically said, don't talk about the owners to him, hasn't he? has basically just said, yeah, it's all about me. I'm coming in just to concentrate on the football. I don't even want to talk about the ownership.
He won't even entertain it. He won't. Yeah. I asked him in an interview, I said, did you pick, I can't remember which player it was, for the life of me, and he just glared at me. And he went, yeah, I did pick him because it was a tactical decision. And I went, oh, yeah, fair enough. But he's only about like 5'9", but goodness me, he's like a stern Mancunian with these piercing blue eyes. And he is very, very intimidating. Like, you know, he just got this look and the room went deathly silent. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
But he won't talk about the ownership. It's his team. I believe there's a little bit of interference going on now with the sporting director coming back and allegedly, these are unconfirmed rumours, that he keeps on demanding meetings with John Sheridan, and Sheridan's just going, no, drives out the training ground. So it's just like, so it's like, is he going to stay? Me and Matt have had this debate a number of times. If he keeps us up, I'd love him to stay. If we go down with him, I'd want him to stay and for him to get us back up. Or will he go out on a high and, you know, keeping us up? But I don't know. I think it's all going to be down to what happens with the owners and what happens with the litigation on the North Stand with our previous owner, who actually owns the ground and the North Stand, which is another can of worms, which is crazy.
That's your newer stand, isn't it? So down one side of the pitch, isn't it? Yeah.
Basically, our current chairman, owner, Abdallah Lemsegram, bought a club but didn't buy any of its assets. He bought the crest, the badge, the training ground and the players, whereas Simon Blitz owns the North Stand and all the ground and all the surrounding land, and he's put that up for sale. So if any potential buyer was to come in, they'd have two parties to deal with in respect of buying the club, which is just...
That's insane, isn't
it? It's something out of the day-to-day, isn't it? It's just something that bizarre and that far right, far reaching. You just it depresses me to talk about it.
I can imagine. It feels like when you look at it from the outside, you think you're likely to go down because you looked at it, how far you were behind. You look at all the off pitch stuff going on. I looked at it back in sort of December, January time, thinking there's no way, like when you've got so much going on off the pitch as well, but you've got yourself in such a position now where you've given yourself a fighting chance. What do you see happening in the summer if you do stay up? Is it something that's just going to rumble on, do you think?
Well, there's at the moment, there's a court case between our current owner and our previous owner about the North Stand, of which the details haven't been given out as of yet, but I think it's to do with the litigation. And he's trying to get a payout of, I think it's about £700,000. And I think that Mr. Lemsegram's we don't know who's going to win, but if he does win, I think he'll take that £700,000 and then find a buyer for the club. I believe there's people been talking to him. There's been offers made of circa 1.5 million, 2 million. We've had this maniac called Chris Lees, who's a cryptocurrency man, saying he was going to buy the club. And he went on the interview, we did our due diligence, and he was like a contestant on Come Down With Me. And it was just like, oh my goodness me. He was a Liberal Democrat in Bristol. It was just like, I think a lad called Andy Halliwell, who does the Boundary Pack Alert System, went to town on him. And we've not heard or seen of him since. But it's just like, these are the wackos that we're attracting to buy our club. It's just like, I won't be surprised if Noel Edmonds and Mr. Bobby turned up next week trying to buy the club. It's just that, because honestly, it's just really bad. But in the summer, we've got all our players out of contract, barring two or three. So if we haven't got an owner who's going to invest, then we're going to still be under embargo if we're still in the Football League. It's just going to be the same old, unless there's a contingency fund that the Trust are trying to promote at the moment, where we're trying to get fans to not buy a season ticket and actually invest in the contingency fund so we can get £500,000, £1 million to come to the table in a consortium sort of way with local businesses. But again, it's the longer this court case drags on, and the longer Mr. Lemsigram's in the ownership, it's not going to look promising unless we get a swift sale. Because did you see that Crawley sold their club in 6 weeks to that cryptocurrency company who tried bidding for Bradford? You know, so it can be done, and hopefully we can get a swift decision on this court case, which I think is going to be around June time. But the positive thing is that as the trust, there are shareholders in the club, they can attend and listen to what's going on in that court case, supposedly. But I think that just needs to be confirmed. So, watch this space on that one. But, yeah, at the moment, it's all about survival. And I think everyone's just getting behind shares in the team just to make sure that we can stay up, because losing Football League status is just unthinkable for someone like Alderman. I know it's the old cliche saying we're a big club, but we took 1,000 to Stevenage, you know, 1,500 to Scunthorpe, and a lot of away fans that I've come across, like even the Port Vale fans, some of them when we were walking out, they were saying, you're the best fans that we've seen for a long while. You know, you sing your hearts out, even if you're 2-1 down, 3-1 down, you are the best. I think we took 600 to Swindon, you know. It's we are a big club. And it'd be really, really sad. But do we deserve to be there from what we've done? I think the owners' actions have been a catalyst for our position.
Mm. So on the pitch, you are fighting for your lives. It seems like the one positive that you have got is players that are fighters. Phil Brown as well. Two of those used to play for us. Chris Misalou. I wanted to start by talking about him in terms of players. He just didn't have a good time with us at all. He started off, he looked like he was going to be a fan favourite. He was diving into every tackle. He was properly getting into
it. You loved him, didn't you?
I did, the first couple of games, yeah. He drifted off. did Carl sign him?
He was training with us. He was at Newport, and Sheridan signed him in January. Yeah. But he was training with us for a good 3 or 4 months with a player called Usman Farn. And I thought we were going to sign him as well. He was an ex-Oldham player, but he went to Morecambe instead. But yeah, I like him, but it's consistency Misalou, isn't it? He's just so inconsistent sometimes. You know, he could be a world beater 5 minutes and then he'll pass the ball to, you know, the other team for the next 10 passes. Mm. But he's probably the best that we've got in the midfield. Like, we missed him when he went on international duty with Congo, and we got beaten in that six match losing streak that we were on, and then he came back against Leyton Orient, and he sort of blew us away again. So he scored a cracking goal against Port Vale at weekend. He played really well, but he's, when the ball drops at the outside of the box for a midfielder following in, he needs to get in front of that ball, but he seems to shy away from it. And I don't know why, because he'll do a silly sliding tackle at the touchline when he's going out for a corner, and he'll make this worldy tackle. But when it's at the edge of the box and a player's running about to run onto it, he sort of shies away from it. And I just can't understand it. It drives Sheridan mad. He openly admits it. But I do like it. He is a good player. And he is a fan favourite as well, but he is inconsistent. But hopefully he can turn that corner after his performance on Saturday.
Yeah, another one of our ex-players, Nicky Adams, absolute hero for us over a couple of spells. What's he been like for you?
He's our far and away. He's crossing of the ball. He must be one of the best crossers in the league. How he can get the ping and the whip and the curl on that ball with both feet. He's so good, but again, he's played every minute, so he's getting tired and getting leggy, but he wants to stay on the pitch, and he wants to, he gives his all, and everyone loves him, you know what I mean? I I really hope he can stay next season if we do stay up, because he's such a good player. And we've even adopted him in central midfield in a few games when we're getting overloaded, so he could just start spraying the ball about. We did that against Swindon, and we did it against, he came inside against Port Vale, he did it for Port Vale, and he did it for Stevenage as well. But again, he's just so dangerous with that set piece. He's such a good player.
I think if I'm putting together a team in League Two to battle relegation, Nicky Adams is one of the first names that I want to sign. He's got that character about him, and that he's just going to dig in, and you know he's going to give it.
Curl loved him. Curl loved him, didn't he? Curl,
absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I really like him, and he's a nice guy off the field as well. He gives you the time of day to speak to you. But you can see that in the game, that when we get beat, you can see it kills him as well. So you can see that although he's played for all these different clubs like Bury and all this sort of stuff, you can still see the passions there for every player. So when he gives his 110%, you know, as does Missoulou as well. I give Missoulou that. He does fight for the team. Yeah. But again, I wish they were all as consistent as Nicky Adams. That's all I can say.
Anyone else we should be looking out for on the weekend?
Junior Luamba, our 18-year-old striker, he's just come back from a hamstring injury. He's a handful. He played 20 minutes against Stevenage because he just came back from his injury, came on and caused them all sorts of problems. He came on against Port Vale. He was on for about 80 minutes for Port Vale, and he's got so much pace. He's like turned from this boy into a man. He's just got wider and wider and taller and taller, and he's still only 18. He's such a good player, but he missed an absolute sitter, so he's a little bit rusty against Port Vale. He should have buried it, but I think that just comes with age and a bit of experience. But you should definitely be on the lookout for Junior Luamba. Davis Keeler Dunn, he's a good player. I think he scored 15 this season. Considering where we are, it's not a bad shout. If we've got Jack Stobbs back as well, he's a nippy right winger. Again, he's a little bit inconsistent, but on his day, he can put them balls in, so you can see that Nicky Adams has really had a good effect on him.
That's great stuff. So we'll come on to predictions in a minute. I wanted to get your overall thoughts first on the battle. It seems like it's one of yourself, Stevenage or Barrow, to get that last place. Scunthorpe are gone. I was looking at fixtures the other day. Barrow seemed to have an awful run in.
Yeah.
Got Forest Green, Salford, Sutton, Exeter, Swindon, and then play us on the last day. So that might help them out a little bit.
If you do that, I'm going to grow a Phil Brown tash and beard and get a fake tan. I'll tell you now. And then.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah,
Danny will buy a Chesurrection scarf.
Yeah, I will, yes. Have you got one, by the way, a Chesurrection scarf?
I've got one on order.
Nice.
They are amazing. I love it. I don't know why. I love stuff like that. You know, just something that fans just go ahead and make and just get done. I think it's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, look,
that's the community of football.
There's a lady who does it called Samantha Curry. You know, she does some great stuff. Like, she does the bobble hats, and she does like all the retro kits with the bobble hats, and they're really, really, really quirky, really good. And you know, I'm really glad, happy for her. But those scarves are a nice touch. So yeah, definitely get one of them.
So as it stands at the minute, can you do it? Can you stay up, Jake?
I think if Phil Brown wasn't in the Barrow job and it was still Mark Cooper, I know it sounds really bad, this, but I hope he doesn't like send a Twitter message to me after or something like that. But I think that the run that they've got is a little bit worse than ours. I'm quietly confident to get something against you guys. And we've got Salford at home, which is going to be absolutely massive. And then we've got Crawley on the last day of the season. Which they've got nothing to play for, so hopefully they'll be on the sunbeds, you know what I mean, just chilling out. But
I don't want an image of John Yems on a sunbed.
Well, he's got a red face, so I don't think he needs a sunbed, does he? I think we need about 7 points, I'd say, to survive. And I think Salford Crawley, you guys are hopefully the outlet that we need. But Forest Green, anything can happen there, really. You know, when they'll be under pressure to get promoted, because I think if they win the next game this weekend and then beat us, they get promoted regardless. So, I hope we're promotion spoilers. If I'm honest, we're party poopers on Monday. And Tranmere, I can't even predict what's going to happen at Tranmere, but away, we're going to take 1,700 fans, and it's just going to... I'm debating whether I go, actually. Well, no, I'm going to go. I know I'm going to go, but it's whether I'm going to be there in mind or just out of body, because I don't like Prenton Park. I hate going there. It's a really bad away day. It's not a nice area, and they always seem to scrape a result. But then that's usually at our place. But when we've been to their place, every time I've been there, we have had a result. So I just, oh, God, it's even the thought of getting a result there, it's just, oh, that's, and if, but then the thought that they could send us down or something like that is even worse to think, because they're like our massive rivals, you know, like the Pat Nevin and John Aldridge days. They always used to score against us and always got the better of us, no matter what. When they used to have that, you know, when they had the kit with Wirral, Pat Nevin always used to score. Everyone thought it has been, and Aldridge every single time, no matter what, scored. And I just have visions of playing Tranmere, and all I think of is John Aldridge like running away to the away and celebrating. It's just awful. Yeah.
Let's bring you more back up to present then, Dave. Yeah. Let's drag you away from that.
Sorry, sir. I went into like a shame sort of well there, didn't I? Despair.
We'll pick you back up with a very simple question that we like to ask all of our guests that come on the preview show. How are you at defending set pieces?
We're relatively good because Calpagiani is a rock at the back of ours. Against Stevenage the other day, he cleared a header, then headed it again, and then ran up the pitch to head it again. So he did like three consecutive. I'll send you the clip. It's just absolutely fantastic. The rebounds header that he did. He's so good. But we've, unfortunately, we had an injury and we brought in this young lad called Will Sutton. And he's been playing the last 5 or 6 games and he's done really well, but he's a bit prone to a bit of nerves. So on the whole, it's usually fast attacking wide teams that get the better of us, but set pieces, we are pretty good. What about you guys? Are you any good at set pieces?
Well, for that's where the majority of our goals have come from. So, which is why we asked the question, because we can't score from open play, but corners and free kicks are our bread and butter. But right. If you're good at defending them, then
we're not good because we're set with the third bottom, are we? We're not good, we've got relatively better, I'd say, under Sheridan, because he's adopted a man-to-man marking system rather than a zonal watch this space for an attacker to walk into sort of curl system.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Benetton, we didn't get that many set pieces to concede against. It was more like wonder goals, really, and open play. So, yeah, on set piece, I'd say we're pretty good. Pretty good.
Cool. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Should we get to predictions, Charles? Have you got the jingle?
I predict a riot. I predict a riot or a ball draw.
I thought that one was appropriate after
fair enough.
0-0 with Bradford. So there you go.
There we go.
Thanks to Dan Dartwood for that, by the way.
Yes. Thank you for that jingle, Dan. Marks out of 10, Dave, for the jingle.
Yeah, I like that. It's good. It was very, was it the Kaiser Chiefs? It was, wasn't it?
Daniel Darwood. It wasn't the Kaiser Chiefs, but
no. Yeah. I thought it was Ricky Wilson there for a minute. I'd give that a 7.5 out of 10.
Solid seven.
And a half.
I'll get the half, damn it. Yeah.
Let's get to predictions then. Charles, let's go with you first. Hold him away. You'll be there across from Warrington.
I will. And the last game that I got to at Boundary Park was that game on the last day of the season a few years ago, where we ran out 5-2 winners, and I wasn't expecting it at all that day. And I'm not really expecting much on Friday either. However, I'm going to go for a scrappy 1-0 Cobblers win.
Scrap it. Nice. Dave, it's you.
Now, on our show, whenever I say a score, it never happens. So, and we always lose. So, I think we're going to sneak a 2-1.
Nice.
Okay.
2-1. I think I'm going to go 1-0, Charles.
Is that just for some balance?
No, I feel like...
Oh, Billy Balance.
I feel like it's going to be difficult. Bradford gave us the whole pitch to play on. Oldham, I just get the feeling, won't do that on Saturday. No, Bradford were completely on the beach. I think Oldham are going to be in our faces. You've got the likes of Nicky Adams, Misalou are going to be all over us. And I think we find that kind of game quite difficult, I think, in general.
Because I saw you, when we started putting the pressure on in the second half against you, your guys couldn't cope with it at all. Yeah, you don't like that scrappy sort of battle, do you? You sort of just spray it about, and then you're getting very frustrated. I think you had that lad up front who scored against a guy. His name escapes me.
Was it at that point?
Yeah, really good player. He took his finishes very well. But yeah, when he started getting in his face, he didn't like it. He was sort of kicking the floor and sort of showing the attitude a little bit. So.
Yeah, he did that.
Well,
you
don't need to worry about him this anymore because Tottenham recalled him in January,
okay.
And he's playing at Cheltenham now.
Oh, right.
There you go. So you've got a whole different kettle of fish to worry about or not up front.
I always remember Forrester and Gabbiadini.
Yes. What a partnership.
Oh, beautiful.
Utrecht's finest. How you signed him, I will never know. And I've always wanted to know how you signed him because he was my champ manager, go-to striker.
There we go. Thank you, Dave, for coming on. That was really great. Thank you. And we genuinely wish you all the best in terms of sorting things out in the summer. Hope you manage
to
stay up.
Can I ask you a question, guys?
Go on.
Do you think... Oh, no, actually. Who would you prefer to go down, Barrow, Stevenage, or Oldham?
Yeah, we were having this discussion the other day, Charles, actually, weren't we?
Yeah, we were.
Said unanimously Barrow, didn't we?
Yeah, we did say Barrow. I mean, there's one of those things. So because I live in the Northwest, Oldham is therefore a nice, easy game for me to get to. Right. So I wouldn't want to lose Oldham out of the division. And then there's a toss-up between Stevenage and Barrow. I have to admit that. However,
especially with Steve Evans in charge.
However, Barrow really are one of those teams that shouldn't be in the Football League.
Have you been in the away end with that tarpaulin? It's just vile, isn't it? And some tiered steps. It's just
it doesn't look great.
Awful.
Doesn't look at all appetising, does it? I'll be hating it every second on the last day of the season, I'm sure, while we're there battering them 5-0.
I hope you really do like a set. I hope they go down on goal difference, you know, something like 7, you know, that's that last
something
minute.
Agonizing.
Please don't rely on us for goal difference on the last day of the season. The set pieces, yeah. We're never going to smash someone that much.
But there's a definitely a fake tan and beard in it for you guys. I'll come and watch.
Yes, yeah.
Come and see you at the Oldham Northampton away, and I'll dress Phil Brown-esque.
We've got it on record now. thank you so much, Dave. Where can we find you on social media?
Boundary Park. It's Latix at OAFC Fawning and at Boundary Park Alert System. And we're on live this Thursday, 7 till 8 on YouTube. And it's Boundary Park Alert System / Latix Football Fawning. Join us if you can. It'd be great to have you on, guys.
Yeah, special guest this week, apparently.
Yes, you are indeed.
So as you listen to this Thursday evening, come and join us on YouTube and make some inappropriate comments my way. but yeah, thank you, Dave. That was great. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Danny.
Yeah, we'll be back with you next week as we look back on this one, and I think potentially Monday's game as well, Charles.
Yes, hopefully so. We'll be back hopefully on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and we'll round up the whole weekend.
Good stuff. We'll see you then. Thanks a lot.